Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
What is Love Radio Show is sponsored by Fantasy App. Fantasy is a safe space to communicate about your fantasies and passions without fear of judgment. It is a dating app for open-minded couples and singles to experiment with your desires that don't have to be secret anymore.
Hello. This is What is Love Show on Radio Free Brooklyn.
What is love?
What is love? Exactly. We're about to find out what love is. This is Sasha Sugar. Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday. I'm so grateful to the God that there is a beautiful day and there is a beautiful weather outside. And I hope you're not on the beach and you are still in bed because you all went out last night. Come on, let's be honest. And you're all hangover and you're in your beds listening to Radio Free Brooklyn because, of course, now after a crazy rough night, you'd like to learn how to meditate. And I'm delighted to announce today's guest on What is Love Show, Masha Orlov. Masha is an amazing human being, of course. All my guests are amazing human beings. But also she is a true spiritual junkie, in a good way of this term, of course. And
some would argue otherwise, though. Some say that it's an escape but I love it. I can't. I'm
Please,
so thankful junkiness.
If you want to debate, you know, Masha's spiritual junkiness, please call us on the show. It's a live show and we have a dial-in number. It's 718-928-9732. And we will hear, you know, your argument against or pro spiritual junkiness. Before we get into the topic, just kind of wanted to share how Masha and I met.
It's an amazing story.
It's an amazing story. We kind of met in the car on the way to our ayahuasca retreat.
Sasha,
one of them
was 30 minutes late, and when I met her, I was screaming at her to run. I was like, run!
In Russian, yeah. Well, with an American accent. Masha's been living here for too long. Yeah, I was like, who is this woman? Why is she yelling at me? I mean, yo, we are going for this amazing, you know, spiritual retreat and she's yelling at me. What is going on? And then we kind of bonded in the car and we've realized that 3 days later, we would be going both for a Vipassana retreat, which is, come on, that's quite a coincidence.
And if you don't know what a Vipassana retreat is, it's 10 days of silence, no reading, no writing. You're not allowed to even make eye contact with anyone. And it also includes 10 hours of meditation a day. So 10 days, no talking, but just meditating for 10 hours a day.
On top of the nightmares and, you know, your ego coming out of you in different ways and pain in the legs, ache in the back. So yeah, that's kind of what Vipassana is. But we actually will talk about it. This is one of the practices that Masha's been doing for quite some time.
Yeah, and ayahuasca. I find that they are the same, but done in a completely different way, because ayahuasca, it's about 6 hours. It's also silent and you're supposed to sit and breathe and concentrate. Medicine gets you to places quicker, but it's the same. You get the same feelings physically and mentally and spiritually that you do in a Vipassana as you do during ayahuasca. It's so funny because they're so completely different right. worlds and different
Absolutely.
Continents.
And Absolutely. But, and that's quite a statement, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who would not agree with you and
absolutely.
Would be like, no, if you cannot do ayahuasca if you do Vipassana, or you cannot do ayahuasca if you do Kundalini. So guys, please keep your minds open. We can do whatever the fuck we want to do.
The 21st motherfucking century. We are all one. We could do whatever the fuck we want, as long as it's benefiting
exactly.
our good and the good of humanity.
Right.
Why the fuck not?
Right. And that's what we'll be talking about today. Masha has over 10 years of practice with different types of and styles of meditation. And so you'll be able to get the firsthand information, not just something you read on the blog, but from a person who has actually done all these types of meditation and spiritual practices. And Masha will share the benefits and maybe the challenges of each of them. If you have any questions about your personal journey of spiritual awakening, call us again. It's 718-928-9732, and we'd love to for you to share your experience, or for you to challenge us to have a question. And again, it's a free world. We're all here to make this world a better place, and self-growth and meditation gives us a lot of tools to do that, right?
Absolutely.
All right, Masha. So let's start with, I mentioned that you've been doing the different spiritual practices for quite some time. What, in the first place, what did bring you to this world of meditation? Like, what was your first technique? Why did you decide to go with it? Like, if you could give us...
Well, I've been doing yoga for over 20 years. I guess I started doing yoga in 1996, 97. So that's quite a long time. I don't really love yoga because I'm an alpha New Yorker. I kept hurting myself, but yoga wasn't enough. I was actually quite depressed.
What kind of yoga were you doing? Just
all forms. I can't just stick to one practice, which again, people say, figure out that one practice and stick to it and grow with it. I love everything that life has to offer. Why am I just going to stick to one practice? I love Kundalini now is my go-to.
Yeah.
But I also love yin yoga. I've also come into contact with the Kabbalah yoga, which is really fun. And I don't know if I got into it also because I'm part Jewish, but reciting the Hebrew alphabet actually got me super blissed out.
All right, we have the pose right there. This is super freaking cool. We all know what Kundalini yoga is. I had an episode on Kundalini, so I hope my audience knows or have read or have heard of Kundalini. Could you tell us a bit more of the yin yoga and then the Kabbalah yoga?
Yin yoga is a very soft practice, just to really settle down, breathe into your body. It's very meditative. Out of all the yogas, I think it's the most meditative for me, because it's about grounding down and just calming down your body. In the busy New York City life, we're just always rushing and running. And that was my problem with Hatha yoga and other forms, was just it was part of my New York City routine, that super hardcore flow, do. Whereas yin, just you sit down, settle in, open your hips, open your shoulders very slowly. You sometimes do three postures in an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I've never tried it. Is it popular these days, or
it is.
Do you think other forms have taken over?
It's definitely yin is feminine, so it's okay. It's very feminine. It's great for right. women.
So it's not a good place to look for a future male husband.
No, if you find a man doing yin, you want to be friends with him. Because then you know that he's open to the female side. And
yeah, which is an issue of a lot of men in this world that they're blocking their female side.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. A lot of women, too.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, you know, we are here to help them, help everyone to embrace their female side. What about Kabbalah yoga?
Kabbalah yoga.
My chiropractor, so mm-hmm. he's into Kabbalah studies and he's trying to convert me into attending the Kabbalah classes. It is on my list, but I haven't done it yet.
I've gone to Kabbalah workshops. I don't know. I love Kabbalah and I read about it. But this is the thing with all these practices. Everyone's like, you need to stick to one practice. In Kabbalah, they're not going to look so nicely upon me if I'm also doing ayahuasca mm-hmm. and then Vipassana and you mm-hmm. know everyone sticks to it. That's my problem. This is why it's almost racist. It's like spiritual segregation in a sense.
So if you were to describe Kabbalah to a complete outside of the spiritual kind of realm, how would you describe it? It's a teaching. Well,
there's
about
a studio on 72nd Street mm-hmm. on the Upper West Side called Nam Yoga mm-hmm. And they have, it's more of a meditation. It's Kabbalah meditation. Mm-hmm. So you do some yoga moves. It's more like yin. It's very slow. You barely have that much movement, intensive movement. It's grounding mm-hmm. down. And the two times I did it, we recited the Hebrew alphabet as part of the practice.
Kind of like in a mantric way?
Yeah.
Mm,
also, it's a mantra, but it was almost kirtan-esque. As well, where we were chanting together. So,
okay. Is there any philosophical foundation for the Kabbalah yoga, like a belief, a faith? Let's say even in the past, now, which we will get to later, there is a philosophical teaching about the sankharas and the past lives, the karma. Is there anything similar in the Kabbalah practice?
To be honest, I did it quite superficially.
Okay.
I just like doing the meditation.
Okay.
I've read about the Kabbalah. I'm sure it's tied in.
But
at the same time, because it is yoga, I mean, it's a new form of yoga, right? Because
I've never heard of Kabbalah yoga.
Yeah, it's a mishmash. I'm into mishmashing.
Okay, cool. All right. So, guys, you've got three practices already for you on your list. The yin yoga, Kabbalah yoga, and the kundalini. So you've been doing yoga for about 20 years mm-hmm. and gradually you realized it was not enough for you to deal with what? Like, did you have to,
were you healing anything?
Okay.
I was a party girl. I was a major party girl.
So Masha is a typical New Yorker who's hustling. She works in kind of fashion.
Yeah,
fashion,
I'm a fashion
world,
stylist.
Fashion stylist.
I started my own magazine. I'm an editor-in-chief. I do creative direction. I dress people for music videos.
Dream job for a New Yorker. As of course, parties come with
this
lifestyle.
And as a party girl, I was very, very successful. I have to say, when I was a depressed, drunk, angry party girl that, you know, was a snob to everything and hated everything, basically thought everything sucked, I was at the peak of my career.
Wow,
it was fun, but
sad.
I was very unhappy. Mm-hmm. Just nothing was satisfying me. And the funny thing is, I had started reading about ayahuasca, and I'm a seeker. I'm definitely into psychedelics. I have been for on and off, not continually, but I had been reading about the benefits of ayahuasca and how it actually helps with depression.
Mm-hmm.
If you're schizophrenic or bipolar, you need to be very, very, very careful with it because it can offset some things. But, you know, just as someone that's depressed and slightly suicidal, it's
just
fine.
Slightly, not too much. You're about to jump off the bridge, but
then you remember, wait, this is going to give my mom a heart attack and I don't want to kill my mom and be responsible karmically for that one.
Okay. So you've been reading about ayahuasca and
in like 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. I had been reading about it and just, you know, it's like in New York when you need to find an apartment, you just start telling everybody, I need an apartment, I need an apartment. This is how I handle life. When I need something, I just start telling everybody.
Manifesting into the universe.
Exactly. And I started asking people, do you know about ayahuasca? Do you know anyone that does ayahuasca? Have you ever heard of ayahuasca?
I can imagine 10 years ago. I mean, now not everybody knows about it. And I can imagine in 10 years ago, Marsha just running around on her parties, you know, high on alcohol and probably cocaine. I don't know.
No, I never did cocaine. Okay. I'm not. That's right. Just too evil that, and dark for me. I don't know.
So no cocaine. Just running around the parties and talking.
On alcohol.
Yeah. Where can I get ayahuasca? Ayahuasca. What's ayahuasca?
And so finally, funny enough, one of my fashion clients, a designer I was working with, said, why are you asking? And I said, I heard about it. I've read about it. I think this is what I need to kind of crack open my mind, essentially. And if you don't know very much about ayahuasca, actually cracking open the mind, read Daniel Pinchbeck. He wrote a book called Breaking Open the Mind, A Modern Day Guide to Shamanism. And in it talks about his... So I had read Daniel Pinchbeck and...
You thought it could help you with your depression back then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because I knew, you know, I was going to therapy and I tried different therapists. And honestly, it offset my therapy into going deeper. Because when you're still... When you're a habitual party girl alcoholic, everyone didn't think I was an alcoholic. Even my family was like, what are you talking about? I mean, we're Russian, Sasha and I. So, well, she's Belarusian.
Thank you. That was a very important remark.
We're Eastern. So, you know, and habitual alcoholism is part of daily life. So when I started telling people, ayahuasca was actually the first time I was like, wait, I think I have a drinking problem. And when I started telling people I think I had a drinking problem, everyone thought I was crazy because everyone's like, no, you're fine. It's not like, but when, you know, we live in a very toxic world where being a habitual alcoholic is actually part of
the norm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you want to break out of the norm,
No, people don't want you to break out of that norm because that would show them that they also have to break out from that norm.
Exactly.
Damn. Okay, so you start talking about it and then...
And then I found it. But first I tried San Pedro. My client actually was like, I think you should start out with something a little softer considering all your issues. And so I tried San Pedro first and it was totally
I love your conversations with your clients. I wish I could talk about ayahuasca San Pedro with my clients.
Well, it's not all my clients, you know.
Well, I did talk about ayahuasca with my boss though. So I think I told you, but last time when I had my ayahuasca vision, it showed me my boss, my account manager, that I need to bring him to the medicine. And I told him about it. He's like, because he just became a father. He's like, Sasha, okay, it's not really my priority, but thank you. I'll consider it. Anyway, so I don't think I've ever mentioned San Pedro on the show. So if you could give us a bit of a intro.
So ayahuasca is called the grandmother. Yeah. She is a vine. She is the vine of death. Because that's how she grows. And San Pedro is a cactus. He's the grandfather, very phallic plant, actually.
It's a cactus. Yes.
Yeah. And so San Pedro is more like mescaline. It's much softer. It's a bit more visual, but geometric.
More emotional, maybe?
I don't...
It's lighter.
I mean, people go through it.
It's a good feeling, right?
It's good feeling. But of course, under any of these things, it's like LSD or mushrooms or even MDMA. Like, on anything, even alcohol or marijuana, you can have a bad trip. You know what I mean? Your heart rate can rise. You're going to get paranoia. Yeah. And you know that just... So, I mean, San Pedro is a healing plant.
Why?
Any healing plant can make you... feel super shitty.
Yeah. Why people usually turn to San Pedro, for instance?
Well, there are shamans. I haven't done this yet, but there are shamans that do... There's actually a Russian shaman that does these weekend workshops, and it's 2 days of ayahuasca, and then he ends on the San Pedro.
Yeah.
It's just a different thing. It's a different level, dimension.
You know, I've tried San Pedro. Was actually the first thing I have tried on my spiritual awakening journey, and it did nothing for me. Absolutely nothing. The shaman I was working with, he wasn't really a shaman. He was semi-shaman. He was a great guy, though. He was trying his, hard. He was trying hard to, you know, get me feel anything. You know, he was playing the music. He was, you know, doing all this oils, massaging.
Some people are resistant.
I felt nothing, not even nothing. I wasn't even high as a wheat high. So, but I think back then my heart was closed. Like everything was blocked.
Exactly.
I was just blocked from any external influence. So it didn't really do much for me. But when I went, the reason why I tried to do it, from my conversations with this community, when you want to actually open up your heart, or when you want to maybe soften up a bit or forgive, if you're going through, you're trying to forgive someone for doing something to you, San Pedro might help with that. It kind of softens your heart in a nutshell.
I didn't know that actually.
Yeah.
The male softening.
Yeah, I think women are more, it's funny, but I do think that women are stronger and probably sometimes are even rougher than the men.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So anyways, so you haven't tried San Pedro though.
No, I did. I started with San Pedro. But yeah, it's really the ayahuasca that was like, girl, get your shit together. You're a fucking mess. And everybody was like, but no, you're fine. You know, everyone thought I went crazy. But then I started, and that's really in 2009. Mm-hmm. So I did the San Pedro 2008 and then the ayahuasca in 2009. That's really when I started realizing all these other levels that I can explore. And because with the ayahuasca, you do sound meditation, essentially. There's a lot of sound involved. There's the Icaros, the singing, the traditional jungle, Amazonian jungle songs and the instruments. And then, you know, people bring in Tibetan bowls and mm-hmm, gongs and
mm-hmm. flutes.
And from the sound, then I went into sound meditation. So that just opened the doors, because before it was just really like yoga for years.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like soft meditation, just sitting still and breathing. And I actually tell everyone, and I'm going to just say this now, if you've never practiced meditation, the first thing you really, really, really need to do is just learn how to sit and breathe. Try to breathe for 5 minutes. Then move it up to 10 and just follow your breath. Because following your breath, the most essential thing to meditation and getting grounded and opening your heart is just sitting with your breath and yourself mm-hmm. and trying to not escape the mind, because if you resist it, it will
it's
be even
kick
more.
You back.
Yeah. So it's just sitting with yourself for as long as you possibly can. If you can get up to half an hour, congratulations.
That's a great progress.
Amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Vipassana, in our Vipassana practice, we are supposed to sit for
hours.
But at home, when we're out of Vipassana, 1 hour twice a day, and which is very, very difficult. I'm finding that close to impossible to do.
I've not been doing that.
Can you guys imagine in New York City just meditating for 2 hours a day?
Well, unless you have super duper rich parents or a super duper rich wife or husband that can
allow
you do nothing but meditate.
Yeah.
So if you have those and they're free, send them my way.
But you can meditate on the subway as well. So just, you know, tuning into your breath for a few minutes and like breaking it up as much as you can, really just settling into your breath and your being and getting out of your head. I think that's the problem.
Since we start talking about meditation, right? So, and we'll get back to ayahuasca. I mean, I can talk about ayahuasca forever.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. So the first step, if you're a new person to meditation, just try to learn how to sit and focus on your breath. Just follow your breath. Don't force, don't try to make your breath unnatural, right? Just breathe naturally and just follow your breath. If you find your mind still floating around, you can deepen your breath for a few times, for a few minutes, you know, make the breath more deep and more heavy, but then still go back to your natural breathing. So that's kind of the most basic way to meditate. Then Vipassana, it would be an extreme form of meditation for me.
Yeah, I highly don't recommend Vipassana or even ayahuasca without tons of other practices.
Absolutely.
And healthcare, you have to eat correctly, because during the Vipassana, it's basically a vegan diet.
Yeah.
And getting ready for ayahuasca as well. You have to, you know, better to be vegan for a few days, because all that stuff, takes so much energy to digest. It actually takes you out of a meditative state when you have too much
and also to just do. To make it clear, if your only intention is to learn how to quiet your mind, ayahuasca and vipassana is not for you. Like those practices are for a deeper work, for healing, for a more difficult and challenging rigor. Yeah, if you just right now your purpose is to quiet your mind and be more aware of your breath, of your how you feel, start with different types of meditation. So breathing meditation, right?
And there's thousands of great guided meditation classes in New York City, and now the apps, and even on YouTube, it's unbelievable actually how the spiritual community has grown into every aspect of life.
Absolutely. So let's maybe talk a bit about the more common and more simple types of meditation, styles of meditation. So I know you, Masha, you've been doing in the past Vedic meditation. So
I studied Vedic meditation. It's also a lot of people know TM, the Transcendental Meditation, which is actually David Lynch's reprocessing, I guess, his version for the Western world. The Eastern is Vedic. And that is based on a mantra. That was early on in my practice. I did do Vedic for a while. And I know people that love TM and Vedic and stick to the mantra.
Because you can also do it anyway. You can sit on the bench in the park or in your office, because you don't even have to say anything. As I understood this meditation, you have to say mantra inside of you. You don't say it out loud.
Exactly.
And then it kind of fades away as your mind just stops thinking all entirely.
Well, so the thing with getting a mantra is, so when I said to get into your breath, the mantra is a way to get into your breath as well and out of your head. The mantra is an easier escape route from the mind, I would say. It makes you get out of your mind.
Okay.
The whole entire point of meditation is to relax your mind and kind of not escape yourself, but you know, just
quiet
the monkey mind. Yeah. And the mantra is a really easy way. Well, easy. It's not like
relatively easy.
it's easier to get to quiet your mind through a mantra. So I would definitely say to look into Vedic
okay.
or Transcendental.
Okay.
If you're.
That's the main purpose, to quiet your mind, just to be recharge your energy, reboost your system.
There's great classes again all around New York City. I did a workshop with some English people that came here from London, actually, but I know other ones.
Okay. What about, so then there is a sound meditation without
I love sounds. Okay. Oh, yeah. So that was actually what the ayahuasca opened me up to, was how incredibly well I resonate with sound, how sound takes me to so many different places in my body and in my brain, because all of a sudden you feel this tension. The sound actually gets into your, I'm hypersensitive, so it gets into my muscles and my bones and into really old, it got literally into childhood trauma, you know, and it kind of digs in, because what I learned is we hold a lot of trauma in our body and physically, and that's where disease comes in. It's like this dis-ease in our body, and it manifests. Sound has been one of my, I love going to sound baths. That is like my favorite thing in the world.
It's funny, you know, when I did my first sound meditation, it literally did nothing for me. It wasn't on ayahuasca, it was just a pure way of sound meditation. It didn't absolutely not. I mean, it was nice to just lay down and relax, but I didn't really feel anything extra.
I think that's because you're a newbie in the whole thing. I mean, Sasha's only been meditating for about a year. So, yeah, of course, you're stuck in your head.
But then when I did it, you know, next time, I felt that it got me to a deeper place. Actually, I started crying a bit at the end of it. So something was coming out.
Could also be the person you went to. So this is something else I wanted to say.
Yeah, let's talk about this.
The teachers and who you go study with or who you go sit with, that's a very important part. I learned that. I've also done this technique called TRE, trauma release exercises, which is also has to do with breathing and movement and to release trauma out of your body. And I did the class twice in a week, first with a woman, and with her, it was just, I was crying. I was having like physical, like body orgasm sensations, so much released. It was unbelievable. Yeah. And then a few days later, I go and I was like, I want to do this again. This is amazing.
I want to cry more.
Yeah, I need to get more shit out. And I go to this dude who I knew both teachers, and I liked them both. I know a lot of people in this spiritual and healing community, so I go to classes that I know people are teaching. So this guy was teaching the same class. I was like, I'd love to check you out. I just did it. This is amazing. I love TRE. I went to this dude's class and it was the same. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't allow myself to get frustrated. I was like, okay, I'm just not resonating with him. Mm-hmm. His way of guiding me through this is not.
So guys, it is a very important point that Masha has brought up. I think with any practice, but especially if you're working through a particular trauma or on a particular, you need to heal something, or you want to get really deep in the self-growth and self-learning, the instructor, shaman, or, you know, the guide, the guru, whatever you call them, it's almost critical. Because the practice, honestly, you will get at least something useful from absolutely every practice. For some people, they will get something more from a particular type of meditation, but absolutely every meditation will give you some benefits if you do it right, in with the right energy, with the right instructor. So if you go, basically our point is,
do your research,
number one, and also if you try practice and it does nothing for you, don't get frustrated. Go try it with another teacher. Go try it in another school. Don't go try it with a different group. In my case, the same situation was with breath work. I did the breath work at the full day workshop, 6 hours, paid $300. Right. That's what I thought. And so the first 3 hours of that breath work, I was a sitter. So I was actually helping out. I was watching the person who has been going through that breath work, and the people in the room, they were doing some pretty crazy stuff. Some people were crying, some people were dancing. Like, I was like, whoa, they're really into something, you know, they're really going through something. Can't wait to be in their shoes. And then 3 hours later, we switched the position. So now I was giving the breath work, right? And nothing for 3 hours, absolutely nothing. I was so disappointed because it's like, okay, is something wrong with me? But again, you know, this was just one of my first practices. 6 months later, after ayahuasca, actually, I did go to Maharos, my favorite spiritual center.
Love Maharos.
Yeah, you know, Lisa
yeah,
Levine,
you know,
she was on the show, and so I did not with her then, but I did it with another practitioner there, and I felt it. I was crying again, guys. And girls and everyone, beautiful human beings, when we say cry, it's a good thing. Like, it is a good thing. We all want to cry when we do a spiritual practice. It's such a great
and breakdown. Somebody recently said to me, what if I go through a breakdown? I was like, please, break fucking down, yeah. Crack open, like release yourself and build up again.
Release all, then embrace new. So I did that. And again, it wasn't a full day. It was only, I think, 1.5 hour workshop. And it gave me so much. So again, the point is, do not give a certain practice enough opportunities to work for you. Of course, you know, if you've been doing, you know, Kundalini or another practice for several months and you don't see benefits, then, you know, okay, maybe time to try something new, but don't get discouraged from one time.
And that's my issue with having to choose one practice, is each practice gives me so many different things. It's like going into a garden and having to choose one style of flower that you love or one color.
So let's get back to those benefits. So sound meditation actually helped you to go deeper into your childhood and reveal some things, the pain from there that you've been carrying since you were a kid, right? And then...
I think it all like chips away at the sculpture, but in a different tool.
Yeah.
In a sense. My favorite is also dance. This morning I was at Five Rhythms Dance. I love Five Rhythms Dance. If you
tell us, what's that?
It's so Five Rhythms, it goes through five different motions. The music goes two waves. It starts out slow. It goes high. I forget. There's like staccato and chaos and calm. There's names. This is another thing. I do need to pay more attention to what it is.
But theoretical.
Theoretical. I just go straight into experience.
Doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, people were, again, crying. You know, some people were crying and the sweat. It's cathartic. Dancing for me is so cathartic, especially in a guided way.
Okay, so it's also guided. So
yes,
it's guided because the instructor gives you the moves, or they kind of guide you.
Well, the music guides you with the five.
Okay.
Yes, and then there are affirmations. There's a whole theory around it. So, I don't know, at one point, I mean, literally the instructor said to fart with your bodies.
Fart with your bodies.
Yeah. It was also dance with you. Make noise with your elbows. Make noise with your knees. How can you express yourself and be as big as possible? And, you know, you can't really make sounds with your knees, but you try to get into that. Imagine it and do it.
So why... Did you get a chance to talk to the people who came to that workshop?
Well, funny enough, because I've been around this community now so long, my hydrocolon therapist, Alexandra DiFaccio from Green Star Wellness was there. She's usually there. I love her. I know, I'm like dancing around with my hydrocolon therapist.
This is so awesome.
It's amazing.
So why people usually go choose one practice over another?
Well, like Alexandra, the hydrocolon therapist, I bump into her at other, she is a multidisciplinary meditator as well. She's from Brazil. She's studied like under Drinvalo Melchizedek's heart opening school. She's done so much with the natives.
Mm-hmm.
I am friends with people that won't choose one form over another as well. Or work with healers that are multifaceted.
But let's say for you today, right, when you left this five rhythm dance workshop, what did you feel? Did you feel
elated? Oh my gosh, yeah. I just feel so happy to be alive. Really so thankful. I mean, I think that's the thing with meditation and really even working with your breath is realizing how sacred each breath is and how lucky I am to have each breath and just to walk. And that's another meditation I do. You know, if I'm stuck in my head and I'm angry and I'm just walking down the street, it's just pay attention to my walk, my rhythm, my breath, and do walking meditation. I love walking meditation when I'm not feeling well, because once you start to meditate and, you know, the head creates problems, right? The head, your mind wasn't there to create happiness. Your mind is there to solve problems. So the mind is going to create problems. And then when you get stuck in it, it's like all these fucking problems, right? Especially in New York City, the rent, the jobs, the boyfriend, the friend that's mean, someone that didn't call you back. And, you know, there's always 100 fucking million problems in this
Rats
town.
Rats on the subway. That's my biggest issue. Wild girl problem.
Yeah,
Rats on the subway.
Oh my God. But yeah, so really it's just makes meditation is just a reminder to be thankful to be alive. So I was very, very, very thankful this morning to sweat.
That's what I love about Kundalini. I think that kind of reminds me of just, you know, Kundalini is this perfect combination of your breath, your movement, your connection to the source. And whenever I go to Kundalini, I just feel so grateful to be alive and connected. Yeah. Ugh. We actually, Marcia and I, we consider to do the whole teacher training for Kundalini. So we'll post you guys, we'll keep you guys posted on that. It's actually 2:40. I'd like to take a quick music pause and I'll play a song that is called Angel by Marcia. Well, it's actually written by Nice As Fuck, band, but Marsha
my
has,
good friends, nice as fuck.
Oh, it's your good friends. Yeah, yeah, I actually really like that music. And so, yeah, so Marsha is an angel and I'm an angel and y'all angels. So let's listen a song that embraces our angelic side. This is Radio Free Brooklyn, What Is Love Show. We'll be back on air in just a few minutes. And if you have a question about a particular practice that you've heard of so far or that you've heard of from other people, just call us at 718-928-9732. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Hello, hello. This is What Is Love Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. This is me, Sasha Sugar, and my guest today is Marsha Orlov, a spiritual junkie, and we it sounds so bad. And we are chatting about different types of meditations and spiritual practices that Marsha herself and myself have tried in our lives. And Marsha has been practicing the self-growth and healing for over a decade, and she has tried so many different types of meditation. So if you have any question for Marsha, call us at 718-928-9732, and we will provide you with a free advice and free recommendation on the best practice for you. All right, so we've talked about sound meditation and a bit of the breath work as well. What about... So basically, I just kind of want to get back to your journey, right? So you tried ayahuasca, you've been doing yoga, then you tried ayahuasca, it opened up you to sound meditation, and it opened up you to breath work. So how are you, I guess my question is, how did you know that a particular practice works for you? Was it just by the feeling good afterwards, by the amount of tears you know, you produced upon every practice? By the, was it a more gradual transformation? You've realized that you respond differently to similar situations in your life. Was it a forgiving of someone? Was it like, how did you know basically when the practice works? And I'm asking this question because You think I'm a baby in spiritual awakening? I think I'm not a baby. I think I've been doing this over a year, and I want the results now.
That's
and yes,
typical.
You know, sometimes I do feel like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy. I'm so, whoa, I'm the, you know, child of the God. I have this divinity in me, and I feel extreme high.
You do
high.
Have divinity in me. I guess that you just answered your own question.
But then 5 days I feel, oh, like 4 days I feel this way, and then 3 days later I'm just back into my similar patterns of thinking, similar patterns of self-loathing, and just being miserable. So it's not
a process.
Like, it's not
you're
like,
gonna always, until you find mm-hmm. the middle path, you know, it's all about that middle path. And that's another thing they say, chasing the high, you know, chasing that feeling good. If you feel the extreme good, you're gonna feel the extreme bad. It's about finding that middle road in
equanimity. Equanimity, as Goyanka said, Vipassana, yeah.
And that's the thing with Vipassana. Honestly, Vipassana is my favorite practice of all. If I could, I would go live in a monastery for even a month. I mean, I somehow fantasize about it at this point, just like checking out, you know, because we're so inundated with information. I get overwhelmed, and working in media and starting my own media company, it's a lot of work and information constantly and communication with 100 million different people constantly. But it's not about feeling good necessarily, because during Vipassana, you're not actually feeling good. You're in pain.
It's very difficult.
And you walk out of there and you're like, what the fuck did I just do? I feel like I was just brainwashed into peace and love and compassion. You're actually brainwashed into love and compassion. But at the same time, to be brainwashed into anything, love and compassion is the best. But it's very, very difficult, and it's physically and mentally painful. And you cry, and then you get back into your life and you're like, fuck, how do I keep it up? And it's just doing the best you can. You know what I mean? Just always being happy that you wake up in the morning, and being happy that you get to go to sleep in a bed at night, and just sticking to the simple things.
Have you still kind of going back to my question of how do you know that when the practice works for you? Have you ever felt that you are doing too much at the same time and you're kind of going cuckoo?
People around me think I do too much and tell me to chill out. But personally for me, I mean, if I didn't have to work and I could just do this, you know, meditate and go to workshops my whole life away, no problem. But it's, as you said, it's actually finding the divine within yourself. That's actually what you're doing. So the more I meditate, the more I realize how much power I have just in terms of the way I feel and the way I perceive things.
Can you give us like a concrete example? I know what, girl. Well, I know what you're talking about, but I feel like the people that
when people complain to me that things, because in New York we're all striving, right, to success or whatever it is what we're striving
become
for.
Become famous on Instagram.
So if you're here in New York, you have a mission of some type. And a lot of people come to me and they're very, very frustrated. And my new line lately is, if you can't keep up with the times are going to pass you by. So people get very comfortable in their spaces. This is not, we don't live in a world where you could ever just be comfortable. There's always work to be done. So what I've realized through meditation is, how much power I have in making myself happy and getting what I want and not depending on the outside world. So, you know, just from making something amazing to eat or treating myself, I'm really one for taking myself out on dates and spoiling myself sometimes and not ever expecting anyone else to do anything for me, including working freelance, finding myself work. It's, you know, it's like a shark tank out there. So mm-hmm. it's really about working hard and being happy and congratulating yourself in the process, because days will go without you finding work or something, but you have the potential to do everything you want. You are master of your own world. It's really what it's shown me, that I am not a victim of my fate because my parents were this way and my family treated me that way, so I have very low self-esteem or what have you.
Oh shit, okay, we have to talk about this now because this is very important. And we only have, no, we have enough time.
Okay.
So a few things you touched here on. The first one, yeah, the victim of our parents, our past. This is a huge, I personally work through this a lot right now. This is my kind of primary, my focal point of the spiritual practice is to work through the past, right? And I feel that I'm a bit stuck in that journey. Like I'm not letting it go.
Most people are.
So that's number one, right? So the past. And then the second thing, the fate versus your master of your own destiny and how this kind of two things play out. Because if we are, let's say, if we are children of God, right? We have divinity. We were sent here by this period, by the divinity. And there is some purpose, you know, for why we were sent here, right? So then to which capacity you are master of your own life, or you're master of your own life only once you tap into that higher purpose. Does that make sense?
I think it's just important for everyone to do the best they can. You know, my feeling is we're all here to evolve our own souls. So that's why work on yourself and self-mastery, just to evolve yourself and grow into something else bigger than when you came. I believe in past lives, so I figure we take all our past relationships mm-hmm. with us, and I'm really into past life regression and hypnosis. So I also went to places where I realized that my problems in this life are not necessarily from this life. I just carry them on through, especially with my father, my brother and my mother. You know, each one, I've known them in the past. I've had different kinds of relationships with them, and they manifested in this life this way. And oh my God, with my father, it's a crazy story. At one point, I was like part of Genghis Khan's tribe. And my father was actually like one of my whores that I didn't give love to. And so that's why karmically he was not available for me, because it's my karmic thing with not having. So, you know, it's kind of saying namaste to all your problems and just, you know, my father is a Trump supporter and, you know, this extreme conservative. So, you know, just finding love for him for having created me. Even if he didn't want to create me, you know, that wasn't his, he didn't necessarily think he was going to get my mom pregnant, but it happened, and he didn't want my mother to have a child, you know, so even that he didn't want me necessarily. Mm-hmm. So, but I still have to give him love for having created me and for me, you know, bowing down that I wouldn't be this crazy fucking loud bitch if it wasn't for my father, because he's a crazy loud guy in a completely extreme other way.
So do you embrace that in you, that you got that from him? Or
I do. I need mm-hmm. to call him back a bit more often. I don't really like to, but, you mm-hmm. know, and I have to love him. It's part of my duty in this life is what I realized. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'd love to never call him back. And I'd love to mm-hmm. tell him, don't speak to me. I don't want to speak to you. But then I'm going to carry, you know, he'll end up dying. And then I'm going to have to deal with this in my next life.
So, well, yeah, thank you so much, Masha, for sharing. This is very powerful. And I think a lot of people can relate to having some sort of dysfunctions in their families and then being carrying the luggage from the childhood throughout the adult lives and next lives and past lives. Could you, just for the sake of the guiding through the meditation styles,
yes.
could you maybe describe a bit more of what the past life regression is, and if you've done any similar techniques for our audience, just to give an idea what those are.
I'm an exceptional weirdo where I actually would wake up in the middle of the night and think that somebody was going to kill me when I was a child, my teens and my 20s, like hide under the bed. So this is what I meant by, when I started doing all this work, I actually had to, it occurred to me that I have some kind of PTSD that has nothing to do with this life. That's where I realized some of my problems come from my past life, that I'm kind of very in tune. You know, a lot of people are going to think I'm crazy, which is fine. I think I'm nuts as well. But I had to find some kind of solutions to my trauma. And, you know,
this is your truth.
That's the thing that rings out to me, because why the fuck else am I like waking up in the middle of the night and hiding under my bed? And, you know, this is when I had roommates, and they'd wake up and be like, why are you hiding under the bed? And I'd be like, oh, somebody was trying to break into the house. Didn't you hear them? You know, and then, no, everyone look at me. So I carry trauma from the past, and past life regression. It's a luxury. It's not that inexpensive. It's quite an expensive luxury. Oh, as well as Akashic Records. I love doing Akashic Record. It's different. Past life regression is more hypnosis, and you verbalize what you see.
Mm-hmm.
Akashic Records is you get somebody to read your Akashic Records for you, and the Akashic Records are a library around the earth and where all the information is stored about every soul. And
so this living. The second technique, is it based on your date of birth, place of birth, or your astrology, or
it is astrology? Yeah, uh-huh. There's astrology, and both techniques you have to be guided, and it's one-on-one,
and it's usually guided by a so the person who's doing that, do they have a specific medical degree, psychiatric degree?
You know, the Akashic Records, it's pretty amazing. If you read the book on how to do it, and if you just meditate a little, that's the crazy thing. All these channels of information are actually open to us, and most humans are really
just ignore them.
Shut down, close them out. And that's the thing with the whole, you know, conspiracy of the chemtrails and such, is that it's actually shutting us off even more, all these heavy metal pollutants from the ethereal world. Yeah, the Akashic Records you can figure out how to do on your own, but I highly recommend for your first times
to invest money and actually do it.
Yeah, and I know, I mean, if you guys are interested, please, do you have an email or DM Sasha on her What Is Love Instagram?
Well, the email is whatislove@radiofreebrooklyn.org. That's my email. So you can, guys, if you need...
Yeah, if you need any practitioners or healers
just
or questions,
send us
later
a note,
yeah.
And I'll connect you with Masha, and we will send you the list of the practitioners who do those things in New York. We're actually almost out of time, unfortunately, because I feel like I'm just getting into the most interesting part about the whole, you know, hypnosis and past regression life. I know also there's a technique of family constellation that allows you to kind of go deeper in the knowing the history, kind of like traumatic history of your ancestors. Which
and
again,
these are all also ways to meditate on your life. It's
right.
Different, but it's, you're actually thinking and concentrating and putting energy and thought.
I don't want to, I feel like we are closing on a sad note, but you know, it is what it is. This is our truth. We're all trying to, as you said, Masha, we're all trying to be, to use our potential to be the best of what we have been given by the source, the divinity. And all these practices, meditation practices, spiritual practices, are tools. They're not necessarily the solution, because solution is within us, but they are the tools for us to be more open to our own truth, right?
Yeah.
And to manifest it in life and to share it with others. I feel that's the only thing you can really do in this world, just to
Absolutely.
Be truthful. And saying that, I'm going to close this. The show is the I Am by Aucana. It's a beautiful song. And guys, enjoy your Sunday afternoon.
Bye, happy Sunday.
And we love you.
Love ya.